You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
Sergeant and Mrs. Smith, you're going to love this house.
Is that a tub in the kitchen?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
Ow. Those uncomfortable things we do for beauty.
Oof. Ouch.
And when it comes to whiter teeth, same story. Until now. Enjoy rinse-free whitening with new Sensodyne Clinical White. You'll get clinically proven whitening technology in an enamel-safe formula for two shades whiter teeth and 24/7 sensitivity protection. Sensodyne Clinical White. A whiter smile without the rinse.
Hi, I'm Joe Iconis.
And I'm Jennifer Ashley Tepper. And on today's episode of The Album Podcast, we're going to be talking about Out of Sight, Out of Mind, the Buddy song, as performed by Krista Rodriguez. This song is a rare cut, a lesser-known gem in the Iconis catalog, if you will. But as performed by Krista Rodriguez and posted on YouTube, the video of that song has gotten, Joe, a lot of questions over the years. On this episode, we dive deep into those questions.
Yeah, and it's definitely one of my more mysterious songs. But the discussion that we have on this episode, I think, is very insightful and illuminates kind of both the origin of the song and some of the underlying thematic stuff in it. So check it out, buddy.
So this next song actually maybe did have some kind of title evolution as well, or?
Yes, it did. It absolutely did. So this Out of Sight, Out of Mind, I think that it was initially called the Buddy Song. Mm-hmm. And then it turned into Out of Sight, Out of Mind, then in parentheses, the Buddy Song. And then the parenthetical just left at a certain point.
Like you decided you didn't want to use it anymore, or?
Yeah, it felt unnecessary, and Out of Sight, Out of Mind just felt like the title of the song. I like titles with slashes in them.
Yeah.
It just felt like a really nice slash title.
This song, ironically, because you're saying slash, brings me back so viscerally to 54 Below before it was Feinstein slash 54 Below. and like Krista Rodriguez performing it in mm-hmm. a Joe Iconis and Family concert. And I think this might have been the one, I just know that the night that she sang it, we like shared the bill with, it was either Barbara Cook or maybe it was Rita Wilson. It was like mm-hmm. Cheetah Rivera. It was one of the nights of 54 Below where it was like some legend was there. And I just remember Krista rehearsing this song and like, you know, a bunch of folks kind of milling about listening to her.
Yeah. I think, was this performed the first ever concert?
I think it was the second one, but we'll okay. have to do some recon on this.
Yeah, in my brain it was the first, but it definitely could have been the second. But yeah, certainly early on. And this is another one that just doesn't get performed all that much. It's kind of a strange tune.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I also say I have like a memory of Krista rehearsing it, sitting around like a giant conference table on a floor that we yeah. only were at for a couple months. Like yeah. it occupies yeah, yeah. a weird place in 54 Below history for me. But Krista, I mean, Krista's premiered so many of your songs and like mm-hmm. she's one of the people you probably had the longest collaborative relationship with yeah. on the album.
Yeah.
So take us back.
Take us back?
Take us back to meeting Krista. It was like 2000.
I met Krista in 2006, yeah, Six, for sure. Yeah. It was during auditions for a developmental workshop of the Black Suits at a New York nonprofit theater. And Krista's one of the few people, actually, that's not true. Well, what I was going to say was she's one of the few people who are in my sphere who I 100% met and was exposed to through an audition. Mm-hmm. But I guess there have been more over the years. But Krista wasn't someone who I was familiar with. Even though I had seen her in shows like Good Vibrations and Spring, I guess Spring Awakening hadn't even happened yet, but maybe mm-hmm. in the Heights off Broadway, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I was aware of her existence, but never really saw her do her thing. And she sang Hallelujah for her audition, and it was like true, and I was playing piano for it because I do it all. I write the shows, I am my own audition accompanist, everything. I sweep the floors after we're through. But she sang Hallelujah, and it was just an immediate like, who is she? Like, it was one of those magical moments. And I just liked
ironically,
her.
Ironically, that sounded like a moment from Smash. Like, someone leaves the audition room, and you're like, who is she?
Yeah.
I like it.
That's what it was, yeah. Smash was, like, being written. It was being written on the wind, even back then. And, yeah, and I just loved her so much. And so she was cast in that reading. And I remember that was also the first day that I ever met and was turned on to Emily Walton. Mm-hmm. She also auditioned that day, and it was like another, who is she? And Sarah Steele, that's her name, right? Mm-hmm. Sarah Steele. But Krista was cast. And so and so I got to work with her, and then, you know, she was in the initial Iconocent family shows, yeah. and was always a part of the group. And she was heavily associated with Blue Hair for many years, and then her performance of Broadway, Here I Come, is the whole reason that song, you know, ended up on Smash and became a thing. And her interpretation of it really sort of changed what that song was. Because mm-hmm. I had sung it previously at a concert at the Duplex, and the lyrics were different. The song was just a different song. But Krista was kind of the person who turned it into something else. Which is just to say that I think that she is just the greatest. I think she's an amazing actor. I think she's an amazing singer and amazing presence. She feels so contemporary, but also feels like such a throwback performer. You know, it's like Krista Rodriguez, you could just take her as is and transport her to 1973, and no one would be like, who's this girl from the future? It would just sort of like be fine. And I kind of feel like you could do the same. You could take her and you could put her in 1940, you know, five, and it would be the same thing. Mm-hmm. Like no one would be like freaked out by future girl.
She's timeless.
Yeah, yeah. And so this song, I wrote it, and I think it was like maybe close to the end when I figured out, oh, this should be a Krista song. That's who should sing this tune. I was just kind of writing it. It's about like a few different things. You know, this is a song that, like, because it's so obscure, I feel like it's people really do discover it. It feels like this this sort of like, you know, hidden gem or whatever, hidden rock or something in my body of work. And people discover it, and they're always kind of like, what is that? What's up with that song? You know, it's like people like it, but they're always kind of like a little bit, they're like confused, intrigued, and everyone always wants to know what it's about. And the truth is that it's about a few different things, but I think I got excited about Krista singing it because I knew that she would be able to sort of navigate the strange kind of emotional journey of the song. It has a really weird arc to it. And I knew that she would just kind of make sense of it in a way that the audience would be able to sort of follow it on a gut level and not question, like, wait, what is this? What happened here? What happened here? Because the song is both like literal and poetic in a very sort of strange way. And so I knew that Krista would be able to kind of like do it straight and people would get it and understand it. And then also I felt like as soon as you have a woman singing a song about and singing a song and sort of using the pronouns he in the song, people immediately, no matter how, you know, how much we have evolved as a society, or, you know, no matter how woke anyone is feeling at that particular moment, people automatically go to, oh, she's talking about a, you know, her former lover, she's talking about her boyfriend, whatever, an ex-boyfriend. People always do it. And so I liked the idea of doing that because that's really not what the song is about. I think it could apply to that, but it's not what it's about. And so I loved the idea of like of having that and then having people maybe question it or maybe not.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. Was there a specific aesthetic inspiration as far as the song? Like, were you thinking of any like 1940s types of songs, or like where did it get placed for you in terms of, because I feel like sometimes people ask about this song and they're like, this must be a one-off that you wrote to be like for a play that was set in another time. Like, I feel like it has that kind of vibe.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just, and it doesn't, you know. I think there was no like specific song that I was trying to point towards. It was a sort of more of a general reference. When I listen to it, I'm just like, oh, it's just a Ken or Nev song. Like, it's mm-hmm. I was not trying to do that. What I ended up with is like a Ken or Nev song that feels like it could have been, you know, cut from New York, New York, or or, you know, at any number of their shows. I feel like the time period for the first three quarters of the song is just kind of like, it's like yesterday, you know, it's just like, it's the time period is like back then.
Right.
It feels a little 20s. It feels a little 40s. It feels a little like 40s as filtered through the 70s. You know, it's just sort of like,
it's Kander and Ebb style. Yeah, I get Kander that. Kander and Ebb,
you know, and I think that, and the Charlie Rosen orchestration, I think really pushed it that way too. You know, there's like a little banjo in there, which really takes me to a John Kander place. And then he put this woodwind line that when the first time it happens, it's like a counter melody. It goes do, 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 which sounds exactly like If You Could See Her from Cabaret.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I think it sort of turned into a little bit of an unintentional Kander and Ebb homage. But the reason I sort of wanted to like, to do it, to write in that, the sort of like pastiche timeless, or pastiche like very time period focused style, was because I wanted to sort of talk about a modern relationship. And I think it's more of a relationship to a friend, or it's a relationship to a collaborator or something. And I wanted it to be really sort of conversational. And it's like, you know, the singer of the song is kind of like, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. Well, I do have this like one problem, but it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. But remember when you said that thing, that really pissed me off, but it's totally fine. And this sort of like someone doubling back on themselves, which is not the sort of thing that you would ever really hear in a song that sounds like this. Like,
right.
It's not the sort of thing that they were gonna write for, you know, the new faces of 35 or something. And so I loved the idea of having this kind of like more modern lyric, mm-hmm. that is inhabiting this old-timey musical feel.
Yeah.
And then, you know, three-fourths of the way through the song, it switches and it turns into a totally different song. And the vibe of that song is it feels contemporary, but I think it feels contemporary in like a 1970s way.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and which again, I wasn't even intentionally doing. I just knew I wanted to like drop all of the pastiche shit and just have it be something that feels like it never would have been written in that time.
Yeah.
Because it feels like the singer of the song is for the first time not trying to dress up the pain that they're feeling, because they feel like they're not supposed to feel it. They're just like giving it to this other person straight,
mm-hmm.
and just being honest. And what that honesty sounds like is just sadness and mm-hmm. loneliness. And so I knew I wanted it to feel totally different before it goes back to the pastiche thing at the very end. But as we were recording it, Ian Keggy kept referring to it as the Elton John section. And so now it's like, now when I hear it, I'm like, oh yeah, this sounds like an Elton John, you know, song from like 1974 or something.
I never thought of that.
Yeah, but yeah. It's just a sort of like piano ballad, like contemporary, you know, or I guess if it's in the 70s, it's retro, but piano ballad where the person is just sort of like dropping their pretenses.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFF's creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFF's The Original New Musical from Shayna Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
And talk us through, so as you said, like it is one of the more rarely performed songs.
Mm-hmm.
When has it been performed other than, like, talk us through the song history?
Well, so Krista premiered it, and then, you know, I think that we've literally never done it again at an Iconicism family show.
I was kind of testing you because I was like, am I forgetting one? No, I think it's like sort of like Ammonia a little bit.
Yeah.
Where it happened, and then it happened a couple times, mm-hmm. but like
Yeah, but even Ammonia has had more performances as far as rare songs go.
Right, right.
And you know what also is funny? It's a song that many times when I've done a solo show, because I really do love the song, I've almost done it, and I just never quite get there because I do think it's such a weirdo song, and it's so long, and it's, yeah, there's just something about it that's strange. But I feel like, you know, yet again, it's another one where I think the orchestration helps it so much. Mm. I think that the orchestration and Krista's performance combined turn it into something that I think is a little bit greater than the sum of its parts.
Yeah.
And yeah, maybe, who knows, maybe we'll do it more now.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, out of sight, out of mind.
Hey, thanks so much for listening or watching to my podcast. Do me a favor and go to wherever you just listen to or watch this thing and subscribe or like or give us a great rating or review, and then head to bpn.fm/album to find out even more information about this podcast, more ways to watch, more ways to listen, and check out my album. Thanks so much for hanging out.
Album Podcast is executive produced by Liz Armstrong, produced by Dori Berenstein, Alan Seals, Kim Garris, and the rest of the team at the Broadway Podcast Network. Be sure to visit bpn.fm/album for both audio and video versions of this podcast and to listen to Album.
Till next time, goodbye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.